It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning, America. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm in for Sandy Rios this morning. I've been with you on previous mornings. It's great to be here. Great to be in this country that we are so blessed to enjoy, so blessed to have. We're going to be talking about a number of things today. A lot of really fascinating things taking place. And, you know, you see the news on days like today and you read about gender reassignments of seven-year-olds. And you wonder, what on earth is happening? I mean, is this real? Is this real? We'll be talking about that later this hour. I'm with you the entire hour. You can follow me on Twitter at ElectionLawCTR, Election Law Center. And I'm the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. Sometimes you'll see me on Fox News. Most of the time I do election law, but sometimes I have a really, really great morning that I get to spend with you guys in for Sandy on American Family Radio. And, you know, we're going to talk very, very briefly about the latest in impeachment. I promise that we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because I know everyone out there knows exactly how this is going to end, right? It's like putting a movie on, like The Wizard of Oz. You know she ends back in Kansas in black and white. We all know how the impeachment saga is going to end, and it's going to end with the president staying in office because we know that this has been a railroading from the start. And, you know, the data, the poll numbers are showing this. Nielsen did a survey this week that said, how is it going to end? And most people, by the way, don't even care. More than two-thirds of Americans, 68%, according to the poll, says the president is going to remain in office. And most people aren't even paying attention in the United States. Ratings are going down. People are tuning it out because they know how the story is going to end. But just to update everybody, we're going to do impeachment in 60 seconds, okay? Because that's about what the effort deserves today. Folks, it boils down to this. Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, was named the point person in the Obama administration on Ukraine. Within a month of that, his son Hunter was named to the board of directors of a corrupt Ukrainian oil company, and they paid him $83,333 a month. Now, if you multiply that times 12, it's almost a million. He's $4 short of $1 million to be on this board. Now, of course, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, knows nothing about oil, right? But an American law has an anti-corruption provision when it comes to Ukraine. In other words, public corruption, the American law disfavors and doesn't want American dollars going to a country where corruption is endemic. And the new Ukrainian president was linked to these corrupt oil companies. And when he won election, he called President Trump, and President Trump decided to play hardball on that phone call. He put the Ukrainian president on notice that he knew about the corruption of Hunter Biden and therefore the potential corruption of the new president. Meanwhile, the president contemplated cutting off aid, something that he has the power to do as the president. And unfortunately, the aid was never cut off, and nobody in the Ukraine even knew that cutting aid was being considered. Folks, that's impeachment in 60 seconds. That's what it's all about. Did a crime occur? No. But that's what impeachment is all about. That's what our country is being dragged through because the president was acting like a president. The president is the chief executive of the federal government and has the power to do the things the president did. You heard Alan Dershowitz, if you heard the news at the top of the hour on American Family Radio, you heard him say that even if what they're alleging is true, nothing was wrong. And folks, that's a very, very, very sorry state of affairs. It's a fantasy land that the Democrats are living in. It's dangerous for the country, but so we roll on. And the story will move toward an ending that we all know with Dorothy back in Kansas in black and white. But that's what the Democrats and their allies on the far left are willing to do to tear the fabric of the country up. Just keep that in mind. Let's move, if we will, from fantasy land back to the real world. Some very, very big news today about the future of Israel. Very big news. Yesterday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was in Washington, D.C. meeting with President Trump. And the two of them appear to be ready to release a major deal on the future of Israel with the Palestinians. This is the sort of thing that has been sought for decades. And the president, as he often will, characterized it in ways that are full of zest. And they say that it is going to be the deal of the century that's going to resolve the Palestinian conflict. Now, do we know much about the details? No, not yet, but some details are emerging on this coming deal, potentially with the Palestinians. Here's a quote from Benjamin Netanyahu. This is in the White House yesterday. "The deal of the century is the opportunity of the century, and we're not going to pass it by," Netanyahu said yesterday in the Oval Office. This is what he said about President Trump. "President Trump, you have been the greatest friend that Israel has had in the White House, and I think tomorrow we can continue making history." Now, what is the deal going to look like? Nobody knows for sure, but they say it's going to solidify Israel's claim on settlements in the West Bank, and it's going to make an independent Palestinian state effectively impossible. So in other words, the Israeli claims of settlements on the West Bank are going to be enshrined into reality, and the Palestinians are not going to get the permanent state to threaten the future of Israel. Now, what are they going to do? And of course, you know it's a good deal because people in the Palestinian Authority are grumbling about it. So therefore, it's probably good. How do they convince the Palestinians to do this? Well, it looks like they're going to give them money. And of course, that's been the centerpiece of U.S. Middle East policy for the last 70 years. Give them money, keep them happy so they don't blow the world up. And is that the right way to go? Maybe it is. Maybe it is if it secures the future of Israel. And I don't think you can lose sight of what a contrast this is from the previous president of the United States. Let's compare and contrast. President Trump is helping to secure a deal backed by American might, power, and dollars that secures the future of Israel against the Palestinian threat of violence. President Obama, in contrast, was directly meddling in the Israeli election, attempting to unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu. President Obama, over and over and over again, took the side of the Iranians who have called for the existential elimination of the state of Israel. President Obama gave the Iranians billions of dollars in cash, which later went into operations to undermine the security of Israel. Could you have a greater contrast than that, really? I mean, does it get even remotely more extreme between the approach toward Israel of President Trump and President Obama? Let's roll the tape back even a little bit more. Now, I like President Bush, but we heard a lot of rhetoric over the years about moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And a lot of people were technically in favor of it. But did it ever happen? And why didn't it happen? It didn't happen during the Bush administration because nobody wanted to do anything controversial. That was sort of like a governing strategy. You see? And what happens when you're not willing to do anything controversial is your opponents, namely the far left radical Democrats, get to set the agenda. If you won't do anything controversial that they don't like, then they get their way. You see how that works? And that's what happened even then. But now we have a president who's willing to do things controversial, doesn't care, moves the embassy to Jerusalem, and secures the Israeli settlement in the West Bank. That's the contrast between President Trump and previous presidents, some who were friends of Israel, some who were sworn enemies, as far as I'm concerned, of the state of Israel. And we all know who that was. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm in for Sandy Rios. It is great to be here with you this morning. I love visiting with you all. We're going to be taking your calls, of course, this hour at 1-888-589-8840. It's 1-888-589-8840. Let's leave the real world for a moment and let's go back into fantasy world. I mean, you can't believe these headlines, right? This morning, Washington Times. Sex change prevention proposals for minors ignite debate in legislatures. Okay. Let's see what this is all about. South Dakota. The first state to wrestle with the issue of South Dakota. There's a House committee that passed a proposal that would make it a criminal offense for doctors to treat children younger than 16 with hormones or gender reassignment surgery. Apparently, there's a seven-year-old in South Dakota that is transitioning from a girl to a boy. 7 years old. Now, if we could go back in the American Family Radio time machine to 15 years ago and tell all of you out there listening this is going to be happening, I know that nobody out there would think we would ever live in a world where one of the issues of the day is whether a seven-year-old girl should be given drugs to become a boy. I mean, really? I mean, how insane do the parents have to be to have this happen? It's so far beyond the pale. You can't even imagine it. And the craziest part about it is that there's people out there who 100% think it's okay. 100% think there's nothing wrong with that. We're going to be talking about who those people are and what they have to say. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm on for Sandy Rios. So you can call in and tell us what you think about gender reassignment surgery for seven-year-olds and the state's efforts in South Dakota to prohibit it at 1-888-589-8840. We're also going to be talking about elections this hour. I'm going to have a guest from Wisconsin. Rick Essenberg from Wisconsin is going to talk about what's happening there regarding elections and some crazy things about elections. What about gender reassignment? You think that that's okay for a seven-year-old? 1-888-589-8840. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm on for Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio. Be right back.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming fast, and we still have a few spaces left.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming to Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas, March 31st through April the 2nd. The retreat is 3 days of relaxation and encouragement for pastors and their wives. It's a chance to address the challenges which are unique to a pastor's family. Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word on AFR and his wife Jan will host the event. Our special speaker will be Dan Celia of Financial Issues, and it happens midweek, so you won't even need to miss a Sunday service. Materials, meals, and lodging are included in the cost of registration. But hurry, space is limited to just 30 couples. Learn more and register at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
We'll see you there.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Christopher Krebs, Director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. He works to improve cybersecurity across all levels of government in the United States. Psalm 59:1 reminds us of the protection we seek for our country. Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Set me securely on high, away from those who rise up against me. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Christopher Krebs as he works to keep our country safe. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Former President Barack Obama called President Trump a fascist during a phone call with Senator Tim Kaine. Mr. Kaine was the former vice presidential running mate of Hillary Clinton. NBC News reports Kaine made the admission during an episode of Hillary, a four-part documentary that's available on Hulu in March. Kaine recounted the telephone call he received from the former president during the 2016 campaign. Obama reportedly told Kaine they had to keep a fascist out of the White House. You know, folks, I contend President Obama hated America. That's why he wanted to fundamentally transform our nation. This was the president who referred to patriotic Americans as people who cling to their guns and religion. He called us bitter. And in 2016, he implied we were homegrown demagogues. Had it not been for President Trump and the silent majority, Obama would have succeeded in fundamentally transforming us. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning, America. My name is Jay Christian Adams. I'm in for Sandy Rios this morning on American Family Radio. I'm the president of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. All we do is election integrity, fight voter fraud. But today I am with you talking about crazy stuff. We just talked about gender reassignment surgery and a bill in South Dakota. A bill in South Dakota, it's called HB1057, that hits the pause button on seven-year-olds, which is a true story, being transitioned from boy to girl through chemicals and other devices. And this bill, which is sponsored by South Dakota State Representative Fred Deutsch, a Republican, and he says it puts the pause button on gender reassignment. And here's a great quote from Mr. Deutsch. As you all know, in South Dakota, we don't allow children to smoke, play video games, buy a South Dakota lottery ticket, gamble in Deadwood, buy or consume alcohol. Why is that? It's because children aren't prepared or qualified to make these decisions. Now, you would think that something like this would be non-controversial. Oh, wake up, Rip Van Winkle. You've been asleep the last 20 years. Because now what's controversial is what Representative Deutsch is proposing. What Representative Deutsch has tried to do to protect children from madmen with drugs and scalpels is what's controversial. If you have something to say about this, you can reach me at 1-888-589-8840. We'll be taking your calls in just a moment. But lest you think that you were in the majority, lest you think your views are the sane ones, let me read you some quotes. There will be blowback, said House Minority Leader Jamie Smith, a Sioux Falls Democrat. Quote, we'll be labeled as a state that is not welcoming and is not inclusive. There's those magic words, inclusive. You guys have heard that in other contexts, haven't you? You know what that means. Democrats have warned South Dakota could lose business opportunities if the bill that prevents children from being given chemicals to transition from a girl to a boy passes. They're going to lose business opportunities, right? Bring the Chamber of Commerce in. They'll save you. We're taking your calls at 1-888-589-8840. I'd like to go to Nancy in West Virginia. Nancy, you have a story about gender reassignment, don't you?
Yes, I do. When I was a little girl, I'm 62 now, and when I was a little girl, I was the biggest tomboy you ever saw in your life. And my mom kept me grounded. She knew that I wanted to be a boy, but she let me play with Tonka toys. She bought me Tonka toys, but she also bought me a doll that had a riding outfit. And so that was acceptable to me. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, by the time I was about 9 years old, I came to the conclusion that I am a girl and I'm going to have to live with it. And you know, I did. I stayed a tomboy. When I got married, I married a man whose hands were a little more dirt stained than mine were. And he's a little tougher than I am. And you know what? I'm happy. And I'm so glad that I did not try to become something I wasn't. You know, they all say, be who you are. And if they're going to follow that advice, then they need to come to the conclusion, be who I am. I am a girl, or I was born a boy. And be who you are and just live with it, accept it. And you know what? You can be unique. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm a little bit different. I don't like to talk about makeup and perfume, but I have friends that are girls, and I feel more comfortable talking with men. But instead of making a permanent change for a temporary problem, they need to teach these kids, you know, be who you are. If you are a boy, you are a boy. And if you are a girl, you are a girl. And it will only damage things to try to change.
Well, thank you very much, Nancy, for that. And, you know, teach these kids. Don't go anywhere near Maryland Public Schools then, because Maryland Public Schools statewide are initiating an entire curriculum on this stuff. Mandatory government school curriculum on why this is okay. So I agree with you. They need to teach these kids about this. But unfortunately, when it comes to government in most insane places like Maryland, they're doing exactly the opposite. You know, here's another quote. Check this out. This is from the South Dakota effort to pass a law that protects children from having chemicals and scalpels used on them to transition them from one gender to the other. Quote, there will be blowback. There will be blowback. We'll be labeled as a state that's not inclusive. That's the one that I read from the Sioux Falls Democrat. And of course, guess who else is involved here? Our old friends at the ACLU. Similar bills have been introduced in a half dozen states. And Chase Strangio, kind of sometimes can't make these names up. So that's like the subtext strange. Chase Strangio, deputy director of the ACLU's LGBT and HIV project, called the South Dakota bill, quote, one of the most hostile starts to a legislative session that we've seen, unquote. Do you notice how they use language? It's hostile. We want to be inclusive, right? Folks, don't underestimate the power of language in these fights. Don't underestimate the manipulation of the spoken and written word, because that's how they move the dial. That's how they change the culture. We're taking your calls at 1-888-589-8840. What about the doctors involved, right? What about the doctors? Should they be held accountable for transitioning 7-year-old girls to boys? We're going to go to Jake in Arkansas. Jake, you've been holding. Thank you very much. What do you have to say, Jake?
Jay, I got a sister. She's 55 years old. She doesn't call herself changing herself into a man, and she changed her name to Marty, but I refuse to call her Marty because she's my sister. But, you know, we can thank Bill Clinton for that when he come out with don't ask, don't tell, and that's when all this stuff started flying out. When I was a kid in school, when I graduated out of high school, we didn't have that problem. I'm 62. But if these people had to pay for that surgery themselves, they will not do that. And these women should stop trying to make these little boys girls. Let little boys be little boys.
Thanks, Jake. What if I, you know, I've just decided just now, Jake, while you were talking, that I'm a lizard. I think I'm going to spend the day as a lizard. It might be fun. You know, I'll crawl around the shrubs, look for grubs. Or maybe, no, I don't want to be a lizard today. I want to be Elton John. Look. Reality has a role here, and it is extraordinarily arrogant, isn't it? It's arrogance and it's sickening arrogance. It's not just ordinary arrogance. It's sickening arrogance for a group of parents to allow or to encourage, which is probably the more appropriate verb, a 7 or 8 year old to change her gender. It's sickening arrogance. And I'm going to say it because that's what it is. People are born one way or another. People are boys or people are girls. And nothing that a dastardly doctor can prescribe or a completely nuts set of parents can do are going to change that. And I like the caller from West Virginia, Nancy, who talked about how there's ways to just get on with the real world. You don't have to be part of a culturally transformative agenda with your children. That's twisted, folks. It's twisted. Let's go to Kelsey. Kelsey's in Arkansas also. What do you have to say, Kelsey?
Thank you for having me on the show, Jay. I appreciate it. I am a physician assistant, and to me, it is just absolutely ludicrous that the American Academy of Pediatrics will come out and make a statement and say, you know, we don't want children under the age of 18 to get tattoos. We don't want them to make a life-altering decision based on temporary feeling or a temporary inclination and permanently potentially mar their bodies before they reach a certain age. But then they change their stance and come over here and say, oh, it's okay for us to consider their mental health and their well-being when we're listening to them try to self-identify their own gender. That just makes no sense that we can have such a strict standpoint. We don't let our kids snort heroin or shoot heroin. We don't let them snort cocaine. We don't let them buy cigarettes. We don't let them drink alcohol. We're going to let them make a potentially life-altering decision at the age of 7 just because they're confused.
Well, Kelsey, what you're doing is demanding consistency from the transformative left, right? You're expecting the world to have order. And when it comes to the transformative left, the world never has order. Order must be undone, right? That which came before must be destroyed. That's their agenda. That's what the entire agenda of the transformative left is to undo the past, because the past is oppressive, racist, homophobic, bigoted, right? Those are the words they use to undo that which came before. And folks, you cannot underestimate this. The transformative left are destroyers. They seek to destroy the civilization that has been built and replace it with utopia, as they define it. That's the story of the 20th century, by the way. Stalin was part of the transformative left. So was Hitler. So were so many others across the globe that sought to destroy that which came before it, destroy civilization, and replace it with your utopia. And you know where that ends, don't you? You know where utopias always end up, don't you? Read Solzhenitsyn. He'll talk plenty about the utopia that he got to live in the Gulag. And that's exactly what the transformative nutcases in the country who want their 8 or 9 year old boys to become girls are trying to do, is destroy reality. Cheryl's in Ohio. Cheryl, what do you have to say this morning?
Oh, as I was explaining, when my daughter was, maybe 6 or 7, going on to 8, we're from a broken home. My husband and I had divorced, and he was really concerned because she was always make-believing being a horse. And she was just playing. She's just a young girl. And he wanted me to take her to counseling because this just wasn't right. Well, you know, parenting isn't easy. And you have to have some common sense in your parenting. And I simply told him, no. She was using her imagination. She was playing. She would grow out of it. And that's right. Like it is with these young men and women who are confused. You have to be a good, grounded, common sense, and take the time parenting. And these people who want to allow their child to rule the roost is not parenting.
Right, but I think it's worse than that. I think it's worse than that. These parents who are tolerating this think they're part of a cause. They're not just lazy, they're crusaders, okay? When you are willing to allow your child to dress like a girl when they're a boy, play with Barbies, and then go through procedures that I'm not going to describe on this show, you're part of a cause. You're not just lazy. You're part of an evil, wicked, dastardly cause. There you go. I said it, Media Matters. Put the audio up.
And we do know that it's one way to destroy the family, and the left has tried to be they've been trying to destroy the family for many, many generations, and it will continue until they can actually destroy the family and it no longer exists.
Well, thank you very much for your call. I think you're exactly right, and that's why we have to draw the line somewhere. And you know, one of the more depressing things about the South Dakota issue is that it looks like the governor of South Dakota, Republican, Kristi Noem, has problems with this bill, right? Hey, this is a winner, Governor Noem. You're going to win with this issue because people are on your side. Don't be afraid of the radical crusaders who want to threaten economic growth and threaten your state. Don't worry about them. Take a page from President Trump. He doesn't worry about what the elites think, he worries about what you think. And that's what makes him a unique president in the history of the country. My name is J. Christian Adams. I'm in for Sandy Rios in the morning. It is great to be here. I enjoy being here with you guys. We're going to talk about elections next. Swing state, chaos. It's already happening, folks. It's already happening. The presidential election fight is occurring now in courtrooms and boardrooms and in ways you can never imagine. We'll be back after this.
But Jesus called for them, saying, Permit the children to come to me and do not hinder them. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Planned Parenthood's annual report revealed the baby butchery admittedly slaughtered 345,672 innocent children in fiscal year 2019. Their report also showed they received $616.8 million from American taxpayers in fiscal year 2019. Both numbers are the highest single-year total since the bloody organization was founded over a century ago. We cannot tolerate what God says is abominable. Regulating murder won't cut it. We must agree with God and demand that baby murder is abolished in our nation now.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Regardless of how you leave this world, be ready by having repented and turned to Jesus.
Amen. And just remember, Jesus says it rains on the just and the unjust. Rain is good, but it also can be destructive. We live in a fallen world, and therefore some bad things are going to happen to bad people and to good people.
Exploring the Word, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
AFA Action.
Repairing the foundations.
American Family Radio.
Announcing AFA.net/connect.
One News Now.
It's the one click that will link you to so many AFA platforms. Pick and choose which updates you want to receive. Easily subscribe or unsubscribe.
American Family Studio.
And to quote our privacy policy, American Family Association will not sell, rent, or lease your personal information to outside organizations.
AFA Journal.
Make a better connection with AFA at AFA.net/connect.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. A pastor I once knew was fond of declaring that, quote, Christians have no rights. What he meant is that we must be prepared to set aside our personal preferences to serve others. But he also created the impression that there is something sub-Christian about going to court to press our legal or constitutional rights. Yet when Paul was being railroaded by the Jewish authorities, he had no hesitation about claiming his legal rights. Paul, as a native-born Roman citizen, had the legal right to appeal to Caesar as a last resort. Paul claimed his full legal rights as a citizen when he declared, "I appeal to Caesar." Said the governor, "To Caesar you have appealed, to Caesar you shall go." God in our day has given us the Constitution, and as Christians we have the same legal right to its guarantees as anyone.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's a facility in the Chinese megacity called Wuhan that's close by the open-air market we're told is ground zero for a deadly coronavirus outbreak. This facility might have a lot to do with the disease's provenance. It's called the Wuhan National Biosafety Laboratory, and it is supposedly one of the most secure complexes of its kind. This lab is ominously situated on a military base that U.S. and Israeli experts think is associated with an illegal Chinese biological warfare program. Potent coronavirus samples were stolen from a Canadian lab by Chinese spies last March, shipped to Wuhan, and perhaps weaponized there. Xi Jinping boasts of transforming his country with a Made in China initiative. If these reports prove true, his Chinese Communist Party may have made, and accidentally unleashed on its own people and the world, a pandemic of unprecedented destructiveness. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning, America. Thank you very much. I am not Sandy Rios. I am your friend, J. Christian Adams. In today for Sandy Rios, thank you very much, Sandy. It's always a delight to talk to regular Americans from here inside the Beltway. You know, we don't get a lot of common sense sometimes. So I love coming on the show. I love being with you guys, and I love talking about the issues of the day. And it's, you know, one of the big issues that we face is that you guys know, because I've talked to you about this on previous shows, is the sanctity of our elections. One of the things I do full time is I run the Public Interest Legal Foundation. All we do is election integrity. We litigate in court, we testify to Congress, We fight the fight to keep our election safe and secure. You may remember President Trump appointed me to his Election Integrity Commission years ago. This is what I used to do with the Justice Department. So it's near and dear to my heart. And one of the problems around the country is dead wood on the voter rolls, right? We're suing the city of Detroit because they have lots and lots and lots of dead wood on the voter rolls, including lots of dead people on the voter rolls in Michigan, some of whom, one of whom was born, according to election records, in the 1820s, right? Michigan wasn't even a state yet, but he's on the voter rolls. So all around the country, we have this problem, and some election officials are better at it than others. And what we have done is we've used a federal law called Motor Voter. You guys remember Motor Voter? You know, you go to the DMV and you get your driver's license. Well, that same federal law allowed private individuals to bring lawsuits to enforce obligations to keep rolls clean. And so I've been doing that in Texas, Mississippi, Florida, Michigan, other places. But guess what? Six states are exempted from Motor Voter. That means that the federal government has no say in how clean those voter rolls are. And I can't do anything about it in those six states. And so I was thrilled when my next guest actually did something about it in one of those six states, a very, very important state, I might add, and that's Wisconsin. Wisconsin is one of six states exempted from the obligations of Motor Voter because when it passed in 1993, they had same-day voter registration. So Congress said, we're not worried about you. We're not going to get involved in your internal election affairs. You can keep dirty voter rolls all you want because you're Wisconsin, you're New Hampshire, you're Idaho, Wyoming. We don't care. So my next guest, Rick Essenberg, of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, if you will, did something about it. And Rick, I want to thank you for that, and thanks for being on the show this morning. How are you doing?
Oh, thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
Great, great. So tell the listeners about the problem in Wisconsin, which before you do that, folks, did you hear what I said? It's Wisconsin, swing state, incredibly important. It is ground zero in this year's presidential election. And Rick, tell them the state of play, how messed up things were there for a brief period of time.
Well, the problem in Wisconsin, and although Wisconsin is a critical swing state, this, as you know well, is a problem that is unique to Wisconsin, is that there are a lot of people who are registered to vote at addresses in which they no longer live. They've moved someplace else, but most of us, when we move, we don't think to change our voter registration. And this creates, as you call it, a lot of dead wood on the voter rolls. And as I learned, growing up in the parochial school, we should avoid the occasion of sin. And a lot of dead names on the voter rolls provide that. These are registrations that can be voted. And although Wisconsin, as you point out, is exempt from the motor voter law, we have our own state law requirement, which essentially says that if an election official gets information that is a reliable indication that a voter has moved, then the following has to happen. The voter is sent a notice from the election officials. It says, we have information that you have moved. And we are going to deactivate your voter registration. If this information is not correct, please return the enclosed self-addressed postcard, and we will continue your registration at your current address. Right? So all you have to do, if it turns out that you haven't moved, all you have to do is return this postcard.
And how many people, Rick, didn't return the postcard who probably should have been removed?
Well, the next part of this, of course, as you know, is that there's this consortium called ERIC, and I know you're not a huge fan of ERIC, that generates a movers list. And they do this by essentially using a computer to do data matching and identify people who have given an address other than the one that they are registered at to the government. Right? They gave a new address, looks like they moved. So there were about 355,000 people that showed up on this list. And about these numbers I'm doing from memory, but about 6,000 of them returned the postcard, and about 8,000 of them then subsequently showed up and tried to vote, and actually were allowed to vote, at that particular address. So that's 14,000 out of about 355,000. That suggests to us that this movers list is generally accurate, right? The people that are on the list have moved. Nevertheless, the Wisconsin Election Commission decided this past year that they were not going to follow state law, that they were not going to deactivate these registrations when people didn't return the postcard. They were just going to wait one or two election cycles and see what happened.
Okay, let's drill into that, Rick. Let's drill into what you just said, because I think that's the single most important thing that people need to understand. Let me, just in case you guys missed it, the Wisconsin election folks, the election officials, were not going to follow the law, okay? And those of you listening are familiar with this refrain in the United States in the year 2020, because it sounds like a lot of other things you guys experience. I want you to understand what's happening in Wisconsin. Rick, how was it? What did they say? Like, what was their excuse for ignoring the law?
Well, the problem is as they put it, well, this movers list is not perfect. Not all of these people have moved, and voters who have their registrations deactivated because they haven't returned the postcard, well, you know, it's not necessarily their fault. It's easy for somebody to overlook a postcard, and they will be inconvenienced. Now, here's, you know, going back to what you opened your introduction to this segment with, Wisconsin does have same-day voter registration. So here's the situation. You get a postcard, and it tells you that we think you've moved. If you haven't moved, just return the postcard, and your registration is fine. If you don't do that, then under Wisconsin law, you can register by mail. You can register online for a substantial period of time, up until essentially the eve of the election. If you don't do that and you go to vote thinking that you are still registered at this is, you know, the address that the government thinks you've moved from, in Wisconsin, you can just register at the polls and cast your ballot right there at the polling place. And because Wisconsin is a voter ID state, virtually everyone that walks into the polling place to vote will have proof of residence, because most forms of voter ID in Wisconsin have your address on them.
Right,
and
Rick,
moved, your address will be the same, and you'll be able to register.
After you guys got involved in this and demanded that state election officials actually follow Wisconsin law, there's a shocking concept. A report came out from the Brennan Center, and listeners who remember me on this show for Sandy on American Family Radio will know that I talk a lot about the Brennan Center. And the Brennan Center folks came out with a report recently attacking our guest, Rick Essenberg, and attacking me and my organization, because they said that we were, get this, bullying state election officials. Remember, Rick, did you see that report?
Yes, we're bullying state election officials because we filed a lawsuit requiring them to follow the law.
Now, folks, I want to focus on this, because this feeds into things the listeners are experiencing in other parts of their lives, that whenever somebody attempts to follow the law, follow what is right, do what is right, there is a whole apparatus out there to call them names. In this case, it's bullying. And you know, you didn't think you'd ever get there, Rick. When I was younger, this was called good government. This was called civil service. This was called trying to do the right thing. But now they've turned the world upside down, that when you tell election officials to follow election law, you're bullies. How do you interpret that? What do you see there?
Well, I mean, it's sort of inexplicable in the sense that there's this notion that, you know, some people have that if they disagree with the law, that they're free to ignore it. And of course, as this story played itself out, that continued to happen. We went into circuit court, which is the trial court in Wisconsin, is what we call it, and in the middle of December, and we obtained an order. We obtained what's called a writ of mandamus. It's a fancy, as you know, a fancy
You're not allowed to say that on this show. That is a prohibited term.
Yeah, you got to. And so the judge ordered the election commission to follow the law and deactivate these registrations. The election commission then got together to decide what to do about it. It's a six-member commission. There are three Democrats and then three Republicans. And they did not vote to comply with the law. The three Republicans said, okay, let's comply with the law and the court order. And the three Democrats said, no, we are not going to follow the court order. Now, as you know, court orders, you can appeal them, you can disagree with them, but until you get relief from them, they are binding. They are the law. Yet one of the Democratic commissioners said, this court order is not the law until the Court of Appeals says it is. And that is simply not true. And so they met a couple of times. They refused to vote to follow the law. They failed to vote to follow the law. And, you know, I've been practicing law for a real long time, like over 35 years. And for the first time in my legal career, I actually had to go to court and ask for government officials to be held in contempt of court because they were defying a court order. I've never had to do that before.
Well, Rick, that's because you probably haven't, and maybe I'm wrong, but this was your first toe dip in this water, I think, right? I mean, generally speaking.
This is the first election integrity case.
Right. So this is all we do at PILF, and this is who these people are. They're lawless, and the election matters more than following the law. Remember, power is more important than what the law says to these people, and we see that manifest all across public issues. But here in elections and election procedure, it's particularly acute that power is more important than right. And I think that's what you were experiencing.
Yeah, although I got to say, I mean, we're a public interest law firm. We litigate for freedom and, for the causes I know that you and I both find very, very important across the country. And we've never had in the state of Wisconsin anybody do anything like this. You know, we've had a lot of controversial litigation in Wisconsin. A lot of it during the Walker administration, where Governor Walker would pass a new law, and somebody would go to court in Madison, Wisconsin, and they'd get for a little while, they'd get a circuit court order,
and held what they wanted to do.
And the Walker administration, they appealed and they eventually won for the most part. But
Rick,
in the meantime, they followed
running
the law,
out of time,
that
Rick.
Didn't happen here.
So, Rick, we're out of time. Thank you for being here. My name is Jay Christian Adams. It's been great to be here for the last hour for Sandy Rios on American Family Radio. Thank you so much for having me. Till next time, you're listening to American Family Radio, Sandy Rios in the Morning. I'm Jay Christian Adams. Have a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.